what is phase two?
New day is dawning. The day of the
Power Cosmic Podcast.
Gathered from around the galaxy comes the world's greatest comic book fans, all in one terrific podcast. It's the
Power Cosmic Podcast.
With your host with the most, the man who puts on Terrific Con, the world's greatest Comic Con every August at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut, Mitch Halleck. Joining Mitch each week will be an assembly of his terrific super friends. Join them as they talk about comic books, movies, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's your old pal Mitch Halleck, and this is the Power Cosmic Podcast Phase 2. And what I mean by that is after 120 some odd episodes here, we are changing the direction of the Power Cosmic Podcast. I know since about, what, over 2.5 years ago maybe, I was joined every week on this show by my friend, Mr. John Cimino. That is now a little bit different. We've gone our separate ways here on the show, and we wish John all the best in his continued endeavors as Mr. Roy Thomas's personal agent and manager, and of course, the proprietor of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market. And like I said, it has been a blast. They said it wouldn't go more than 20 episodes. That's what my friend Mr. Matt Herring said. And he was wrong by about 100 episodes, though. We had some power-packed fun. We had some energy. We had some good times. We had some great shows. We had some great comic adaptations. And of course, you fans out there know we've had nothing but idle chatter for over 120 episodes. If you listen to all of them, God bless you. If you haven't gone back and listened to some, try it. It might make you laugh. It might make you smile. But anyway, we are now in phase two of the Power Cosmic Podcast, and that's going to be a whole new wide variety. It's almost going to be like a Marvel team-up or a Marvel 2-in-1, my favorite books from days gone by. It's going to be almost like a Mitchie team-up, and every week I'll team up with a new comic book fan, maybe a creator or two. You never know what you're going to get here on the all-new Power Cosmic Podcast. And today's episode is a perfect example of it. I am going to talk about collecting comic book art. Yes, whether it be original pages, whether it be sketches at conventions or commissions, we're going to talk with one of my friends who's been collecting for years, Mr. Steve Barker, and that's coming up later on the show. Future shows, we'll have some comic book hunt stories with my friends Scott and Chris. We'll have Mr. Jerry Ordway pop in now and then and talk about the state of comic books and reminisce about days gone by. Maybe Mr. Paul Cooperberg or a whole bunch of other folks out there who are big comic book fans just like you. And maybe you want to be on the Power Cosmic through the magic of communications and cell phones. You could also be on here. Because if you remember in one episode, we tried calling somebody and it actually worked. So that all lies ahead. So I'm going to sit back and not waste your time anymore, because we got about an hour and 10 minutes or so all about original artwork coming up now. So sit back, listen to it, and remember, have a happy Halloween this week if I don't see you. And as always, go to Terrific Con, Connecticut's Terrific Comic Con. Tickets go on sale on November 21st for the 2019 show. And don't forget, Connecticut Gamer Con, if that's your bag. That happens this March 23rd and 24th, and tickets for that go on sale November 1st. Also, booths are available as well if you want to be an exhibitor. That's all I have. Again, welcome to Phase 2 of the Power Cosmic Podcast. Let's give it up all the way from parts up north. Sketchgetter B himself, Mr. Steve Barker. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Mitch. How you doing? And thank you for that introduction, which I can't possibly live up to.
Do you still go by Sketchgetter B? That's a name that was coined by, I believe, Chris Giaruso, correct?
No, that was Matt Herring in regards to a Married with Children episode when Bud Bundy was calling himself a Grandmaster B. And so Matt Herring made up Sketchgetter B.
Oh, and that was quite some time ago, if I recall, right?
Yes, it was. It was a solid 8 or 10 years ago when Matt was calling me that, because we both like Married with Children.
And you were getting sketches at New York Comic Con. Oh, no, the Big Apple Con, correct?
Big Apple Con, and the first sketch I ever got was right at Matt's comic shop in Springfield, Mass.
Oh, Most Excellent?
Yes. But well, by that time, it was called, no, not Most Excellent, Biff Bam Boom.
Oh, I did not know that. Anyway, we're going to start up, because I have a bunch of questions about this stuff, because it gets everywhere. When we're talking about original art, we're going to talk about a couple different things tonight. Let's just let the playing field out. We're going to talk about original comic book art in pages that were used to produce a comic book, correct? That's yes. Some of original art. Then we're going to talk about sketches that you could buy that sometimes they have at shows that are already pre-done, and you just get them from an artist, or maybe he does a quick thumbnail. And the other one would be commissions. I believe that's the various types of art, right? Commissions,
yes, yes.
Original pages, and sketches.
Yep, mail-aways are commission type stuff. Yep. You can also get you can call the ones you get at shows commissions as well, because you're paying an artist to draw something for you. But,
okay.
You know,
all
but
right.
Yeah, original art is the big one. The pages are the big one.
All right, let's start with pages first, because then I'll get into that, because that seems to be something everybody understands. In the old days, because nowadays a lot of digital stuff has replaced the original pen and ink drawings on paper with technology. But in the old days, the artists would break down a page with pencils. They would lay it out. They would send it over to an inker. The inker would then go over the pencil lines with it. Some would say trace, some would say embellish. And then they'd get that black and white piece of art. They'd send it off to a printer. They would take a stat, and they would burn a plate. They would do a color key. They would break down the different color films that they had to use to get the magenta, cyan, yellow, and black that would produce your four-color comics. Then over the years, we went to digital comics, where we did more high-tech type of color separations. But through it all, the artist would have month to month about 20 something pages of original artwork. Now in the day, the companies used to keep that art. Marvel and DC and all the rest, Charlton, used to hold on to those pages in the 50s and the 60s. They didn't return them back. That was a procedure that was started in the 70s. I believe it was championed by our own friend Mr. Neil Adams about giving the artists back their pages, and that's when it started to become more of a commodity, because a lot of these artists, they did tons of books a year. They didn't need, you know, hundreds of pages stacking up at their house or in their closet. So they would start to give them away, actually, or sell them at local comic conventions. But it was not a high-priced market. It was very inexpensive. Back in the day, I even know people that bought John Byrne X-Men pages, even covers, in the early 80s for like something like unheard of, like $80 a page. Or $100 maybe for a John Byrne X-Men cover, something crazy. So, in your knowledge, what is the highest price? How hard is it for you to come across original pages? I mean, now we have the internet, but do you know what it used to be in years past, how to get a hold of original artwork?
Well, like so many other things, I'm going to have to speak anecdotally on the stuff that happened 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago. First of all, I'd have to say that in terms of art pages, I've heard many stories that where back in the day, the printers considered page art basically production waste.
Mm-hmm.
And they would use them to sop up ink or toss them in the trash. And
yeah,
it wasn't considered any type of one-of-a-kind collectible. And so obviously so many pages got lost to history. And at some point, somebody decided to say, hey, this is real art, there's no other one like this.
I've got even something more horrific. It was the job, I believe it was Len Wein and Paul Levitz. I think it was those two guys, or maybe Marv Wolfman. When they worked at DC, when they were just starting out, one of their jobs was to take the pages that were returned to the company from the printers and to take a razor blade or a knife and chop up the pages, cut them up into pieces, and throw them away. And what some of those guys started doing was, instead of throwing them away, they were fans of the artists that were drawing them, decided to keep a bunch of them. I think even Mr. Roy Thomas could tell you stories that a lot of the pages they were supposed to throw in the trash, they just took home as souvenirs. You know, nobody was thinking about this is going to be worth 20, 30, 50, 100,000. They just liked the artwork because they were fans.
Exactly. And that's probably how the world of art dealer happened. Somebody must have ended up having these pages, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages. And once these people started realizing that they were worth something and were worth keeping, you had the people who had, you know, gathered all these pages probably started being your early dealers. And so, yes, I'm sure there was a bit of a trade going on, and there was there was probably catalogs, like for comic books.
Yeah.
There were ads for comic shows in the back of comic books, or there were catalogs that got sent back and forth.
Yeah.
The only thing you had back then basically was letters, handwritten letters, and telephones. That's how people communicated most of the time. So, you know, communication was slow. You either had a catalog or something of that nature. But once the internet happened, everybody was everywhere in an instant. Post things up online and you show everything you have.
Even before that, though, I know when they did start to return the pages to the artists and the inkers, I think Jerry told me, Ordway, that there was some policy that they had, like for every book, I believe the inker got like about 5 pages back. Because, you know, he did some of the work, you know, obviously the penciler and then the inker works as a team. But when they turned the pages back in, they would give so many pages back to the inker and then so many pages back to the penciler. So
yes.
you would have a bunch of different books that were just separated out there. So you, like a Klaus Janson would get so many pages back from Daredevil and then Frank Miller would get the rest. And that's how they did it. Because I know Ordway got pages from Crisis. Because Perez was doing it, and then DiCarlo was inking it, and then Jerry took over as the inker. So I know Jerry got some pages back as well. And, I mean, like you said, they're one of a kind. Kind of like those animation cells were back in the day when they were one of a kind pieces of art, and people threw them away, or they just took some, I think it's called Bestine. They just wiped the ink off the plastic acetates and reused them again and again for the animation cells. They didn't think about collecting anything. So
exactly,
but I was gonna say you wish you could go back in time and get some of these pages. I know because you're about my age or so, and I bet you wish you were collecting in the 70s and the 80s when this stuff was being thrown away, don't you?
I do, and it comes down to what your knowledge is of something, and then what your budget is. What are you able to do? I mean, in the 70s or 80s, I was late teens, early 20s. I was getting ready to get married and have a kid, and that type of collecting wasn't even in my mind.
Yeah, so
I collected comic books, but that's because I was on the subscription system with the comic shop,
right?
And I didn't have to spend a lot of time. I'd go in there a month later and pick up 20 or 30 books that had already been saved for me.
Now, I'm trying to remember when this collecting art became a thing, because I got my first original art was when I turned 30 years old. My wife went to the local comic book shop, and I was a big fan of Star Wars. And I always wanted some artwork from the Star Wars comic books. And I knew they were out there, but I didn't know how one got it. And she went to the local comic shop that I went to, and he went to San Diego. And she asked him if he was out there, if he came across some pages to get a couple pages of artwork from Star Wars. And, you know, that would be my birthday present. So I remember going there, and this is 1996 when I turned 30 years old. And the guy, unbeknownst to me that she made this arrangement, he laid out in front of me Howard Chaykin's artwork from Star Wars issue 7 with the giant rabbit in it, some Carmine Infantino artwork laid out again. And this has the bubbles with the words in them as well. They were all glued in there. It wasn't just the artwork. And he said, "Oh, what pages would you like?" And I just said, "Oh, I'd really like this Carmine Infantino page that had Han Solo and Chewbacca on it." So that's what I got for my birthday. And I think at the time, she never told me what the real price was, but somebody who worked there told me for that one page of Carmine Infantino Star Wars art, I think my wife paid like something like $80. And that was like outrageous. Like, oh my God, what are you insane? $80 for why? Why did you do that? You know?
And exactly. And Carmine Infantino he's a legend.
I know. Now I don't even know what those pages would cost. So, you know, I'm not going to sell it. It's downstairs, but when was the first time you came across original artwork and actually thought about purchasing it?
it would have absolutely been at one of the early Big Apple shows I went to.
Mm-hmm.
That was Matt Herring again.
Yeah,
I owe Matt much credit for draining my budget, because he introduced me to art and commissions and everything else, which of course led to Pages. And
right.
We go to the Big Apple show, and there's this whole new world. I remember going to Neil Adams' table and getting some books signed for virtually free.
Yeah.
And at the same time asking his son, because I was even doing sketch cards at the time.
Yeah, I remember sketch cards.
Right, smaller equals less money. Well, it doesn't always work depending on the artist. So I didn't get anything from Neil Adams, but I did get one of my early commissions from Sal Buscema.
Oh,
a nice,
really?
Beautiful, yes, a Spider-Man head at the Big Apple show. And that was in 2005.
And how much was that?
That was free.
Really?
That was free. He was doing sketches for free. You had to wait in line. And I also got something. I got a nice full-size Spidey from Rich Buckler in 2005.
And how much was that?
That one, I think, was $50 or $60.
That's very reasonable. We're talking an inked page and an inked sketch?
Not a page of art, but a commission.
Right.
Right.
A full body penciled, and was it inked as well, or was it all done?
Yes, it was inked, but it didn't have any scenery on it. And yet, a few years later, I went back there, and he did a little enhancement for like $20 extra for me. So now he's not just floating in midair holding webs; he's going by buildings mm-hmm. doing it.
Now, did you go to these shows looking for particular artists that you liked, or you just walked down the artist alley and see who was available and who was open to do a commission and such?
My experience with Tommy Castillo at Matt's shop was the first time I had ever really had any interaction with an artist. And then when we went to the Big Apple show, that was actually my first real comic show to speak of. And so this was a new world for me. And at this time, I was 32.
Uh-huh.
I hadn't been going to any of these things. I rarely, if ever, had even been to New York. I was kind of a homebody,
right.
And so I was introduced to this whole world of art in commissions and in pages. And I started looking around like, wow, pages. But I wasn't collecting pages, and I'm sure they would have been less expensive in 2005. Not super overly, because by that point people knew that pages were pages. But the thing is, I mean, I got into it slowly. I was never a big spender, so I started shortly and small with 8x12 comic show art.
Yeah.
And then I kind of jumped into mail away. I got a nice Dick Giordano mail away Batman head.
Really?
Yes, I do. And I have these things in my room.
Now, how would it work back then? Because I don't know about email. I guess it's emails back then. Or did you just get the guy's phone number? Or did you pay him there? Or they did the art and then you sent him a check? How did it work?
But we were still in the internet age by 2005. And so I was looking around and I came across the artist choice, Spencer
Beck. Yeah, there you go.
And he had so many artists in his stable,
yep.
And many of them were available for commissions. And one of them was Dick Giordano. And at the time, I did not realize how prolific and how much work this guy had
done. Oh, God, yeah.
But the sheer number of books that he worked on, if you ever go to Comic Book DB and take a look at all the credits he has. But
right.
I mean, you know, I knew him from Batman.
Yeah.
And so I asked for a Batman bust. And it's an inked Batman bust. It's much like so many of the Dick Giordano Batmans see, but it doesn't matter. It's mine.
Yeah.
And it's a piece of finished art. It took some time on that at the time. And then, you know, so I arrange it through Spencer, and then I pay Spencer, who obviously goes into Dick's pocket and gives him the specs of what I want, and then it gets shipped to me. You know, a month later, a package arrives on your doorstep.
Oh, it's so funny you mention that, because my first knowledge of getting these pages, I was working in Norwalk, Connecticut in the year 2000. And the Ultimate Spider-Man had come out with Mark Bagley and Brian Michael Bendis writing it. and it was pretty popular. And I remember searching on the internet, which again was still kind of new for shopping in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I came across the Artist Choice website. And what struck me is because it said Norwalk, Connecticut. And we worked in Norwalk, Connecticut. And I knew where the address was. And it literally, it was a couple blocks from where I worked. And Spencer Beck and I are about a month apart in age, actually, because I've gone to know him years later for actually doing Terrific Con. He coordinates a lot of the artists and books a lot of the guests for the show. But at the time, I remember looking at that website, and they had so many Mark Bagley Ultimate Spider-Man pages, because Bagley was cranking the stuff out. And I remember the price tags on them were about $90 average. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's a lot of money for a Mark Bagley page. Because the way they broke it down is if the character was in costume, if he was a Spider-Man or hero, if he was on the page, it was so much. If it was just background people like J. Jonah Jameson or Peter Parker, if he's not in the costume, it's this price range. If it's just the head, if it's the full body, there's different categories of like how they rated the page and how they charged you for it, depending on what was on there. And of course,
exactly.
A cover.
It's a splash page.
Yeah, a splash page was a big one. Yeah, a front cover is going to cost you more. Mm-hmm. But looking back now, the prices were kind of reasonable for what you were getting for an original piece of paper. But again, like you, I just had our first kid and we were having our second kid. So money was not disposable income to go out and spend $400 or $500 for a front cover at the time.
Exactly.
I mean, I wish I did. I look back at that stuff now. Now it's thousands of dollars, but you know, you just don't know. I know. It's like if I had known that I could have got the front cover from Ultimate Spider-Man 10 for $500 or $600, I would have done it, because now it's worth about $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000, if not more. But
exactly.
But that's again, you mentioned Dick Giordano, who's like a legendary guy, another guy from Connecticut, no less. And he was so prolific. He had so much artwork. I know his son, that after Dick passed away in 2010, his son hired one of those 1-800-GOT-JUNK people to clean out his dad's house because he just couldn't do it by himself. And I know they must have found flat files full of original Dick Giordano art, because the guy just did so much work. You know, he had like must have volumes of pages. And I always wonder what those guys did with that artwork they found, if they threw it in the garbage or they knew what they had and went and sold it off. You know,
I don't when you say garbage and art pages, I don't even want to think about it.
No, that's, honestly, because the average person, there's also that story about how Neil Adams years ago in a car left a portfolio of original art in the trunk of a cab, and the guy took off. I don't think he ever got those pages back.
I remember that story. And you always wondering, you know, I mean, if somebody knew, and there's always a way to contact Neil Adams, be it online. I mean, the guy lives in New York.
Yeah, I know.
You know, if you only have to put in 5 minutes worth of effort, you could find somebody.
Yeah, but to the average person who just opens up a box and sees a bunch of drawings of Spider-Man and Superman, this is before the big movies came out and the TV shows. Maybe they just thought it was some kid's drawings and just tossed it. You don't know.
It's absolutely true. You know, and so you can. It's easy to lose art. And
oh,
that's why,
I mean,
like a lot of
paper.
The old real pages, the old production page art since there's less of it, because over the years you're going to lose part of it. It's going to change hands.
Oh yeah, when you mentioned before about pages being used to sop up ink and stuff, I heard stories from Bob Layton that at Charlton Comics, they would use it like when people would come in from the snow and the mud would track in, they would just take the pages of original art, we're talking Ditko work and all that, and just leave it out in the lobby, and the guys would come in with their wet boots and just stomp on their the snow off their shoes and just walk all over these original pages. And they're like, it's unimaginable today to think of that. You know,
right.
Ditko and art now, being used as a doorstop or a welcome.
Exactly. And now you have the auction houses where if people have them, they can consign them to the auction house. Or you have the big dealers like Spencer or Romita.
Oh, there's
Man.
Albert Moy, Spencer.
Albert Moy, and you have
Doug
Anthony
Peters.
Schneider.
Anthony Schneider's another one. Yeah. There's so many of these guys out there that sell original pages now.
And you can just browse and browse and browse. And there's always going to be something. Not only that, there's always eBay. I bought plenty of pages.
I've gotten pages, too, on that. I've gotten, remember Dan Spiegel?
Yes.
Who did a lot of Black Hawk, but he did some Indiana Jones pages. And I got the pages for like a song. I mean, it was like literally like $30 a page. And I was, because I'm a big Indiana Jones fan, but I also knew Dan Spiegel from doing the Blackhawk comic. But I was getting a lot of these, and I think it was from his son that was selling them, because you could just tell by the address. And it wasn't much money. I think I have about 15 or 20 pages. It depends on the character in the book. Sometimes, like an Indiana Jones guy, obviously, if it's a Herb Trimpe page, it's going to go for a lot of money. But if it's like, you know, somebody you might not have heard of, it's not as much, you know?
Right. I have a Herb Trimpe page, too, as well.
Do you really?
Yeah, I do. I and the thing is, it was sold to me as a Pat Olaf page. But the person who I got it from, the heading on the page wasn't quite as clear as it needed to be. So I bought it anyway because I liked the page. I brought it home, and I had to do some internet searching to find out what book it was from. And I found out what book it was from. And I have the book, and it was drawn by Herb Trimpe. And I actually had him sign it a few years ago at a show up in Upper New York. I saw him at, and I went there just to have him sign the page.
Well, it's kind of fun
missing a bubble.
Oh, I was going to say, it's kind of fun. Do you always go out and get the issue that had that particular page in it to compare it against it to see what it looks like?
A lot of times I have the issue because I'm collecting pages from regarding characters that I like. So I collect Spidey and Batman. I mean, it's easy to say that because those are two of the biggies, but that's what
I. But there's a lot of Spider-Man and Batman books out there. I mean, there's like seven different Spider-Man titles. There's a lot of pages there.
Exactly. And I have a page from a Spectacular Spider-Man book that was drawn by Sal Buscema, and it's an X-Men crossover, and it's a battle page, and I got it on eBay for $50.
Oh, get out of here.
Hand to God.
When was this, though?
This was probably a couple of years ago.
Really? That recently?
It shouldn't have gone for 50, but it was one of those things I got. I'm guessing I could probably sell it for 200.
Was it mislabeled or something? Was it damaged?
No. It's easy. I go into eBay and I put in original art page and then what I'm looking for. Spider-Man, Batman. Sometimes you look for a villain and you'll come up with others. That's what I put in the simple searches because I want as many possible outcomes on that search, and then I'll try to filter out some words, be it
Is it because of the volume of there's so many pages out there in the world that maybe a lot of this stuff isn't as expensive as we think it is?
No. This should have gone for $200.
Oh, okay.
It was one of those ones that just slipped through. I was bidding on a page last week, and I had put in a top bid of, I think, $205.
Uh-huh.
It was a nice Spider-Man page, and I thought I had a shot at it because it was with 5 minutes to go. It was still at $60. I'm sorry, it wasn't a Spider-Man page. It was a nice bronze Batman.
Yeah.
And I said, I got half a shot at this.
Who was
and
the artist?
I went back and looked, and it had gone for $600.
Who was the artist?
It was
Jim Aparo.
It was not Jim Aparo, and I don't remember the artist right now. I don't know if it was Irv Novik who we were talking about, if it was somebody else. But it was around that time, and it was a nice page. It wasn't a battle page, but it was a nice page.
So, and was the Batman character on it? You saw him in costume?
Not fully, but it was Alfred and Bruce Wayne.
Uh huh.
And so the main characters were there, and for the time period, it was easily worth the $200.
Well,
and obviously, it was worth $600 to somebody because they paid for it.
I know, and there's another fellow I know that one of the Nick Barucci who runs Dynamite Comics. He's got a huge original art collection that I know of, and he's a huge fan of Jim Aparo's. He's got so much Jim Aparo artwork; it's not funny. So there's. That's a case where I know a guy who just likes a particular artist and goes after as much art as he can find of his. Is that a situation with you? I mean, you mentioned Sal Buscema a couple of times. Do you just like Sal's work, or do you just really go, as long as it's a good page, you're not too particular who the artist is?
I know there are people out there who collect specific artists, just like there are people out there who collect specific characters. I am not artist specific. I'm more character specific. Mm-hmm. Sal Buscema is just somebody I know who drew a lot of Spider-Man, and I met him, and he was a nice guy, and he drew me a Spider-Man head. Those things kind of imprint on my mind, and I remember the good experiences. And so right. when I go searching, sometimes I'll search specifically for Sal Buscema. Just like I'll always try to find art by Paul Ryan, the late Paul Ryan.
Oh, yeah. I just, because, you know, it's so funny you mentioned, I saw a piece by him yesterday at my local Cave Comic shop that I go to in Newtown, Connecticut. The owner of that shop is a huge Batman art collector. In fact, you go to the store and the walls are covered. He has like hundreds of original Batman sketches from every artist you can imagine. And I saw Paul Ryan right on top of the doorway when he came in. It was behind a box and I saw the name. And I go, oh, I remember meeting Paul Ryan a lot. He was a guy, I think he was from Connecticut.
Yeah.
He was always at the local shops, and he was always drawing. I remember him from Fantastic Four. He did a big run on that.
Yes, he drew a lot of Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and there was always Paul Ryan pages, but he died very young. I think he's 60-something. He had a heart attack and died suddenly.
But he was very quiet.
Yep.
And
he was white-haired guy. You see him in the corner. Wouldn't even make a noise, say hello to you. Very polite, but always drawing, you know. But very great artist, very good.
Exactly, and I saw him, I have seen him at plenty of shows, and so I emailed him before a show in the fall one time,
right.
And I asked him, I said, hey, do you have any Spider-Man pages? Because he's drawn Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Oh, I said, or pages with Spider-Man on it, because if Spider-Man's a guest, that's cool too. And he said he'd take a look, and I told him I'd see him at the show, and when I got to the show, he had one page. It was an Avengers page, and they were fighting Nebula, and it was Thor. Thor was big on it, and they were having a battle, and Spider-Man was on it. And so there's like a panel with half of Spider-Man and a panel with like Spider-Man's legs.
Oh, okay.
He's jumping out of the way.
Yeah.
And I got that for $50 from Paul Ryan.
You know, I was going to say, you know what's funny? I remember going to a show in Waterbury. It was called Classic Con. It was run by Bob Lyons, who owns the Legends of Superheroes. It was a comic book convention. And out of nowhere, there was a guy in the back, and he had original pages of the guy who works on the Walking Dead book. I think it's Charlie Adler or something.
Yeah.
And it was this book he did. I think it's called Authority. It was for DC. It was about the supernatural alien invasion. And this guy had so many pages of this guy, but there were no superheroes. It was all, you know, just human-looking stories or human characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had on him Dan Jurgens pages of Jurgens Doomsday, where Brett Breeding, when they brought back like the origin of the Doomsday character from DC. And then he had Fantastic Four pages too. And he only wanted like $50 or $60. And we're talking splash pages, 2-page panels of, you know, battles and stuff. And I remember thinking the same thing, like I could go out now and buy this, but what am I going to do with it? And that's the other thing I want to ask you. You have so much artwork, you can't frame and hang all of it. How do you display it, and how do you keep all this stuff? Where do you put it to keep it safe?
Most of my smaller pieces, my 8x11.5s, which I had really started filling up my areas, I have them on my wall framed. Most of them have custom mats on them.
Going back to the framing, what do you do? Is there like archival glass or an acid-free stuff? I mean, are you particular about what you use so it doesn't ruin the art?
I was not. When I first started putting them up on the walls, I was not. I was getting the coupon from Michael's, and where I can get half price, and I was going in there and getting their inexpensive composite material frames,
right,
with basic glass. And then I would also get mats of a certain color. With Spider-Man, almost all my Spider-Mans have a red mat on them, and all my Batmans have a blue mat on them.
Well, I know something about framing somewhat, because I used to work in a frame shop when I was in college. Now, you don't put these obviously in direct sunlight, and you make sure they're not getting hit by the sun, because they're not UV-coated glass. It's going to probably age the paper. Do you worry about that stuff?
I don't worry about most of it. I have my main room is the windows are, it's muted light. And so some does get through, but it's not direct sunlight on anything. because I also have a lot of action figures, and I don't want the action figure cards and packaging to yellow or to fade. And right. So none of my stuff is in direct sunlight.
Yeah.
But I have so many, and I know, I don't think you've been in my house. And
no,
so
you haven't I don't seen think, my rooms. No, usually we go to shows, either we meet somewhere or something, because you're way up in Springfield area
right.
or Ludlow, and I'm down here in Connecticut. So
right.
usually we meet at an off-ramp or something.
Right, and then I have a secondary room mm-hmm. Where I have a lot of stuff on the wall, but it's the same thing. I have the windows covered
right.
With good drapery, but I have some bigger stuff on the walls, mm-hmm. along with some of my actual art pages. But the rest of them are in portfolios.
Right.
People have argued that if you're not looking at the art, that you're not appreciating the art. And it's almost wasted in a portfolio. I understand that point.
Yeah.
But I've chosen a bit to collect certain types of art. Now, I am not buying art every week.
Mm-hmm.
If I come across a page... I told you about a page I'm in the process of making a deal for.
Right.
It is not a high-end page, but it's a page I like, and I will be happy to own, and I will look at it.
Right.
But it's not always in view. It's in a portfolio.
Well, I totally get that because huge art collector. I mean, going back from since I was a kid, I mean, I remember they would have these mass-produced portfolios in the 80s. And you can get, and I still have them now I think about it. You would get artwork of like Michael Golden. I have some Mike Zeck. And back then there was a company called SQP. I'm going to think that was the initials. Sal Quattro Productions or something like that. And he would put together portfolios. I have a Dave Cockrum X-Men stuff. And they would do like 11x17. They would be like pinups. And you could buy these things. And I have Cloak and Dagger is one I have by Rick Leonardo or Ed Hannigan. I can't remember who did the art. But I have these, and they would be full color, mass produced. They're not originals. But some of them would be signed by the artist. But they were prints. And then I remember, like, where would I put them all? Because you didn't want to hang them up because it would ruin them growing up. So I would have these in, like, you know, folders. And over the years, I would just get a lot of artwork. And my wife would even say, you know, it's not on display. We don't have enough wall space in this house if I put every sketch and drawing and stuff that I have around there. This is only so much you could put. So do you rotate out some of your sketches now and then and go, oh, that's a nice new sketch. I want to put that up and maybe I'll take this one down. Do you do that?
I do. Sometimes they don't so much fall out of favor, but I'll go through my portfolio and I'll see the smaller ones because that's what I have displayed most. And I'll say, oh, I there it comes again. I say, oh, I forgot about this one. I really like this one. And then I'll look on the wall and I'll see that I can rotate one out and I'll just switch the frames out. I'll take one out of the frames and put it in the portfolio and I'll put this one that hasn't seen the light of day for a couple of years and I'll put that in the frame and put it back on the wall. I don't do it as a regular routine,
mm-hmm.
but I do oftentimes I look in the portfolio and I'm like, oh yeah. And you do, you have a tendency to, I hate to say forget about it because again, it's like you're almost misusing the art.
But right.
I have well over 100 small pieces and I probably have 40 larger pieces. Uh-huh. And then you get into the art pages. I probably have 100 art pages myself.
Now, when you have these pages and stuff, when you get the sketches, the artist, I assume, signs it, right?
Yes.
Do you ever get them personalized or you don't? You just have the artist sign it? Or does it say to Steve, best wishes, Jerry Ordway or something?
Some do. And I know that also that some prefer to because of the eBay aspect of everything.
Right.
They
know you're not going to go flip it. Because to be honest with you, I've worked Jerry's table at a couple shows and not my show because I'm running around doing Terrificon, but I'll go to other shows with Jerry. And when he'll do a sketch for somebody, he'll say, oh, do you want that personalized? What's your name? And they go sometimes, no, just sign it. And I look right at him because I go, I bet you in an hour it's going to be on eBay for twice as much as what this kid has paid for. And that is what it is. I mean, you know, Jerry charges X amount. The people pay it. They can do whatever they want with it. But there is a part of me that goes, wow, dude, you're just getting that to go flip it. That's kind of whatever, but the people do it though, you know?
Right. Now, and that's part of the business of conventions and art is that depending on your philosophy as an artist, you, if he says, oh no, you can just sign it, right? I have things that are made to me. Some of my art from Barry Kitson is signed to Steve. I have no problems with that. I'm keeping it. And if somebody, if at some point I decided to thin out my collection, and I have sold a few things here and there, but people have to understand that there is plenty of signed art out there. I see it on eBay.
And I have a sketch I bought, and it said, like, to Joe. And I can't remember who the artist is right now, but I just wanted the, might be an Al Milgram, Captain America. And I think it said, like, to Joe, and it was up on eBay for like $50. And I'm like, you know, if I really want to be a jerk, I could just cut off the to Joe part. But I just liked the sketch, and it was, you know, something I didn't have, and it was only $50. And I'm like, it's not so bad. And so what? My name's not
right.
Joe.
And if any artist said to me, I always personalize, that would never stop me from getting art from somebody I wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a problem.
That's the way I look at it. Now, if I'm coming to him because I want something for him to draw for me.
Well,
now, if he wants to make it out to me, I'm not going to tell him no.
Well, we talked about getting sketches at shows, and now a lot of guys, I know when I do Terrificon, I'll get emails from the artist. They'll say, hey, Mitch, just put it up on your website or put it on social media that I'm open now for pre-commissioned sketches. So what they'll do is they'll have people tell them ahead of time what they want drawn, and they'll draw it, and then they could come to the table at the show and then pick it up right there instead of shipping it out to people. Do you go early to these conventions to get your sketches? Do you write them letters ahead of time? What's the most common way you go about getting convention sketches nowadays?
I have a personal website, spiderfiles.com, and I have opinions, and sometimes I put out things that what I've learned and maybe can help somebody else. And one of the pieces of advice I give to people who may be starting out collecting art is know who's going to be at the show you're going to.
Right.
Check him out. See if he has a website and see if he's going to be contactable. And you can ask, do you have a pre-show list? And will you do a piece beforehand and bring it to the show? Sometimes if you're just on the pre-show list, you're okay. You don't have to rush in there and try to get there at 6 o'clock and wait in line.
Right.
I have missed guys because I have gone to their table. I've gotten there at 8:30, 9 o'clock, whatever, maybe a half an hour after the show.
And they're already
maybe
booked 10 o'clock, up.
And they're already full. They're full, not only full for the day, different artists will take a list on, say, Friday or Saturday that will cover Sunday as well.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it.
So you're out of luck. Well,
yeah,
you didn't spend the money, but at the same time, you didn't get the art you were hoping to get.
Well, no, I know. I was just at Baltimore Comic Con, and Tom Grummett, who's actually coming to Terrificon next year, I was with his wife, and we were going over. He had like two or three pages full of requests from, you know, people wanting sketches and stuff. And it was just crazy. I was like, how is he going to bang all those out? But he did. I mean, it's going back to the hotel room and drawing all hours of the night to get those sketches for people out there. And I know Mike Zeck has done that too. And sometimes these guys will draw pictures, and for whatever reason, the fan who wanted it doesn't show up. And they're stuck with some sketches. I've had Zeck towards the end of a show one day had like a Punisher sketch and I think a Captain America, and whoever wanted it, for some reason, they didn't pay for it. They just asked him to draw, and they were going to pay it when they picked it up. They just didn't show up. So
in that case, the artist, he's stuck with it.
Yeah.
But there are people who will pay for a Mike Zeck Punisher sketch, and it's just a matter of a week to get rid of it.
Here's a secret. If you want a Mike Zeck sketch, check his Facebook pages out after a show, and now and then he'll put that up and say, hey, man, I got a couple sketches left over from whatever show, first come, first serve, who wants them? And he just puts them up on his Facebook page or his website, and they go in seconds, literally. It's like, oh my God.
Oh, absolutely.
Mike Zeck Punisher page. Boom, done.
Right. I spoke to him briefly at this year's Terrificon, and he seemed like a very nice guy. It's just that he doesn't have time to do everything that people want him to do.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you that, too. So you do sometimes get commissions. Not everybody's at a show, so you'll write to somebody. What's the longest you've had to wait for a sketch? Like, you ask somebody to draw somebody, and then you probably almost forgot about it, and then it shows up like two or three years maybe later. I don't know.
My longest is 18 months.
Really?
And
who is that?
That was, and I have the piece right here. That was Matt Haley.
Who's that?
Matt Haley. I knew him from doing covers on the Birds of Prey, the early Birds of Prey.
Okay.
And so I had contacted him, and I don't remember how I get everybody's contact info, but it's never dirty. One guy, another collector I was going back and forth with talking to, and he told me that he had a word list of emails for a lot of artists. I don't know how he got them, but I said, sure, send it to me, and I'll take a look, and maybe somebody, I'll get contact for somebody. And I contacted several guys, and I told them, I said, I hope you don't mind me emailing you. Yeah. If this is, in fact, your email, I was interested in the commission. And they emailed me back. And then we got to talking, and I did get a few. But regarding Matt Haley, like I said, I don't remember how I got his email, but I asked for a Batman bust.
Uh-huh. When you say a bust, you mean like chest up, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And
shoulders said, or whatever, yeah.
Right. And he said, sure. And it was more than I usually paid at that point, but I had kind of already gotten into the negotiations with him, and I didn't want to just say, no, forget it, screw you, you're too expensive. Yeah. So I said, okay, $150 for a bus shot, whatever.
Okay.
That's more than I was paying back then, for sure. I was like $50 or $60
right
at that point. And so he said, okay, sure. He goes, I'm really busy. I'm out in California. He was doing some work for some TV shows and what have you. But he gave me his email, and every couple of months I would email him, and he never failed to return my emails.
Mm.
I had already sent him the money, but as long as he kept responding, there was always a real chance that I was going to get it. And in no point did I ever think that he was screwing me.
Right.
I just thought that at some point it would get lost in all his other work. Well, I time after time, month after month, I'd email him. He'd email me back. Oh, geez, I'm still too busy, but, you know, check with me. And I check with him. And then probably on month 16, he said, what was that you were looking to get again? And I told him, I said, you know, a Batman, you know, a bus shot. I mean, if you want to add in a moon and a couple of bats, I'd appreciate it. Right, you know, for the effort, for the weight. And so about a month later, I get the package at my door, and it's not a Batman bus shot. It is a full body.
Oh, get out, really.
Toned marker, gray and black on the shadows on the cape. Full size, or not, of my 8.5 by 11, and it's beautiful, and I love it. And you know something? It was just a matter of waiting and being patient, and not getting off one of those acerbic emails that you hear people writing.
Right. Yeah.
And it's worth $150 all day.
I was going to say, what is that one of your favorite pieces in your collection?
No.
Really? What's your most prized drawing or sketch or page of all the things you've collected over the years?
I have two that I always go back to, and one of them is an early one. It was in 2006. It was by Don Perlin.
Oh, wow. Don Perlin, the creator of Moon Knight,
I know him. And he was drawing Werewolf
by Night. Yeah, that's where the Moon Knight comes from, yeah.
And he did a beautiful pencil Spider-Man, but like deeply shaded.
Yeah.
Well defined the musculature and everything, you know, like an old time guy, and with the tops of buildings and the clouds and everything. It's relatively simple. It's a classic pose, but when I got it back, I was just, it really struck a chord.
Well, do you worry that it's in pencil? So how do you have that in a sleeve? Are you worried that it's going to rub off or?
No, it is in a frame. It is in with one of my custom mats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really touching anything. It's, you know, it's touching a quarter inch of the back of the mat around it. But, and that's it. It's nothing's going to rub off.
Well, there is, when I worked back in the day drawing in the art supply world and all that, there's this stuff called fixative, which is a clear coating that you could spray on pencils. It adds just like a, you know, it's invisible to the eye. It's just like a Scotch guard used to be. You just put it on fabric. It would protect it and keep things in place from getting dirty or damaged or anything like that. I'm just throwing that out there. You don't have to get it done, but sometimes people put that on artwork just to preserve it, you know.
Right. And another piece I have is from Leonard Kirk. And I got that from Spencer Beck as well. Uh-huh. I asked him to get a hold of Leonard Kirk for me and do a Batman and a Spider-Man.
Oh, wow.
The Batman, the two separate pieces, the smaller pieces that I get, but the Batman was well done, mm-hmm. About what I was expecting. It's Batman, a couple of batarangs and things like that. It's a cool pose.
Right.
But the Spider-Man, and obviously he didn't know that I was more of a Spider-Man guy. I didn't get to tell him anything. Mm. But this is virtually a fully rendered Spider-Man knocking out a purse snatcher near a fruit stand with actual word bubbles.
Oh, wow.
And I was amazed. I think he told me one, I think part of the
why were there word bubbles? Effort. Was it meant to be a production piece?
No, he drew it. He drew the words and the bubbles. He drew the text on it. And it's those two pieces, which are smaller and they weren't expensive, but they both strike a little chord with me.
Well, you know, it's funny you mentioned Spider-Man and Batman. The very first comic show I produced here in Trumbull, Connecticut, I think you were at that show at the Trumbull Marriott in 2012. The program cover for that show was done by Mr. Mike Lilly, and it was a commission he did for somebody in Italy, and he let me use the artwork, but it was Spider-Man and Batman meeting each other, and that was the cover I used for the program for that show.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know.
A couple pieces by Mike Lilly.
I was going to say, I don't know if you have that cover or if that program, but I have it in my archives here. That's one of my
archives.
It's in the archives. That means it's in a Rubbermaid bin in the basement. The Mitch Halleck archives. When they make it a museum here of all the stuff. There is a lot of stuff. Like I said, there's flat file pages. And yeah, I had two sons that took over downstairs and it was full of video games and lacrosse equipment and you name it, guitars. We had so much stuff crammed in that little family room, but now they're off in college. So I've kind of taken over and it's just gotten boxes of comic books and toys and all that downstairs. My wife's like, that's your room now, huh? I'm like,
yeah.
Literally, it's like a cave. And I don't mind it. She goes, there's stuff piled everywhere. I go, but you know what? It's my stuff.
It's my stuff.
Yeah,
right.
It's like
it's my space.
You have upstairs. You have the everything else in the house. But give me my little 300-square-foot basement that, you know, hopefully doesn't
leak.
Yeah.
It's your work as well.
I do. I do all the terrific. We're down here right now recording the Power Cosmic. I'm here in the family room / basement, you know, with the dog sitting next to me recording this right now. So, but I have, like I said, I only have a couple things hanging up on the wall. There's some sketches I have that I, one of the benefits of being a producer of a comic book show is when you book a lot of the artists, and especially my show, I usually get artists I'm fans of that I'll start a conversation with them. And they'll always say, hey, Mitch, by the way, thanks for having me. Thanks for flying me out. Thanks for putting me up at the hotel. Is there anything I could do for you? And I'll always ask, and I'm never one to ask a lot. And I'll say, hey, man, could you do me a quick sketch of like Captain America? They go, oh, is that your favorite? I go, yeah, kind of. They go, oh, sure. And I've gotten some that are just really quick sketches, Howard Chaykin. And then I've gotten elaborate, full inked, unbelievable, like 11 by 17. I've got one from Bob Layton back in 2014 when we did the Bridgeport show. It's it's gorgeous. It's like a Bob Layton picture. It's like everything you would picture. And I didn't know he was going to do that for me. I remember him asking me, he said, hey, Mitch, who's your favorite character? I said, it would have to be Captain America. He's, oh, okay. So I didn't know anything about him. That was on the Friday he showed up. And on Sunday night when he was leaving, he says, oh, I got something for you. And he gives me this. I wasn't expecting it. It was gorgeous. You know, it's one of my favorite pieces. And sometimes it's nice to get surprised by this. You know, like I had Keith Giffen draw me a Rocket Raccoon in pencil. That's kind of cool. I've got that character. And this is before Rocket Raccoon even came back in the Guardians of the Galaxy. So it was, and he was the co-creator of the character with Bill Mantlo. So it's kind of like really cool to have a Rocket Raccoon drawn by the guy who helped create the character. I've got a Neil Adams for my birthday. I've told you that. That was crazy because Neil just said, when are you turning 50? And I said, July. And he says, oh, would you like a sketch? And I said, yeah, who wouldn't want a Neil Adams sketch? And I thought it was just going to be something small. And then when I showed up, it was a full, I think was 11 by 17 or bigger of Batman climbing up a building, fully penciled and inked. And not only that, he ends up using that art as a cover for a variant. And I think you told me now that meant the price on that original piece was like a lot more because it was a published cover.
Published art is always worth more than a similar quality commission. Just one of those things. I mean, everybody wants a cover. You had the cover before it was a cover. Look at that.
Yeah, that I didn't know. You know how I found out? I was at my Cave Comics, and I'm looking at the Batman books on this cover, and I'm like, wait a second, because mine's black and white, and here is a full-colored drawing. I go, wait, I have that drawing. I did a freak out. I go, that's my Neil Adams drawing. And I went over, and I grabbed the variant, and I was like, and I saw Neil Adams at a show, and I said, hey, you didn't tell me you were going to make this a cover. He goes, you're welcome. I go, oh, because I guess Neil did the original art and must have scanned it in and held it onto it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So,
right.
And then when they called up and said, we want a Batman variant cover, he said, hey, I got a drawing right here. So, well, that's been cool. And it's been like one of these things. I am always amazed when you do this stuff. I wish I got more artwork because there's some people out there that even come to my show now. And I'm almost embarrassed to ask him to do stuff. I know Kevin Maguire. I might ask Kevin to do me a page. He's famous for the Justice League International and all that. But he did a Captain America miniseries years ago. I think with Roger Stern when it was during World War II, Captain America and Bucky. And what Kevin Maguire does is he takes these Coptic markers and he does these full color like portraits. Like you call them a bust. I call them head and shoulders and stuff.
Yep.
He does those at shows. I think they're only like $200. I'm going to say only because I don't know if that's a reasonable price or what people charge or whatever. But he has it on his website, and he breaks it down. Here's what I charge, and here's what you get, and you know, work with me. What do you want? And I'm very open and negotiable to stuff. But do you have any colored pieces, anything done with the Coptic markers?
I do. I have many more colored pieces of sketch cards.
Yeah,
I've had a lot of people put their little colored marks on sketch cards, but I have gotten colored versions of art. It's going to be usually the smaller stuff because for me, the bigger stuff has always been inked or markered. I have a watercolor.
Well, do you worry about the colors fading from those? That's my biggest hesitation about the marker stuff. I'm like, oh, that might fade.
I honestly can't worry about it
because
it's kind of like what I want when I want it. My two best color pieces are both from Barry Kitson.
Oh yeah,
I love Barry Kitson. It's a Spider-Man and Hobgoblin that I got at this year's Terrificon.
Yeah,
and then I have a Spider-Man and Black Cat that I got at Boston Comic Con.
What wasn't it Baltimore?
No, Baltimore, I didn't last through his line back in the day.
I remember, you and I drove down with Matt Herring and Billy, and we drove, I think it was 2010 or 11, we drove down. It might have been 2010, and we drove down to Baltimore Comic Con, and you got in line. I remember going to get Adam Hughes, because he's another one that if you were the first 10 people in his line, he would draw something for free as long as you donated to, like, the dog charity. Was it St. Bernard's? He had some kind of fundraiser if you gave money to his charity to help a certain breed of dog, he would draw for
you. I remember that.
Yeah. But he was another one, too, that as long as you were the first 10 people, he didn't charge you. Was Barry Kitson the one that did the Black Cat and Spider-Man for you, and he added all this detail? They were on a building. Was that Barry?
Yes, that was a Barry Kitson.
And that was free, right?
No, Barry's system has changed over the years. It used to be that you would get whatever you want for free. Color up to the full size,
but
black
how,
and white,
but
pencil,
how did
whatever
he,
you want.
But how did he work that? Wasn't it like a lottery almost?
No, you waited in line. And that line that generated itself on the first day of the show was the only line, which means that come the end of Saturday, you would then take that spot in line on Sunday and continue to wait. And you had to experience the line. You had to endure the line in order to get your Barry Kitson piece. And you'd walk away with this beautiful piece for free. And I tried it a couple different times. I think I lasted an hour, maybe an hour and a half.
How many,
like,
I mean, literally people would wait 3 days in line?
Yes.
For a free draw. I remember you trying to get that. I remember we were going to Baltimore, and it's all you talked about. And I kept thinking of Dennis Kitchen, who's another artist, and I thought that's who you were talking about. I was like, Dennis Kitchen. You were like, no, Barry Kitson. Which is funny because Barry Kitson's now drawn me 2 years in a row the cover for the Terrificon program. He did it last year, was a tribute to Adam West, and this year was the Infinity Gauntlet, Captain Terrificon.
Right, and a heck of a nice guy, too.
Oh, yeah. And that always cracks me up, too, because I have original pieces of artwork by Barry Kitson that's used for my program. So I guess it's kind of a unique one-off commission type thing. But that's Barry just does that every year for the show. He'll call me up and say, what do you want me to draw you this year? And I'll say, could you draw Captain Terrificon doing this?
Yes.
And that, and that's kind of cool, too, because I've got... You know who I collect a lot of is Jerry. Well, I do have a lot of Jerry Ordway stuff because he does stuff for the show, and then he gives me the original artwork. But I was going to say Chris Giarrusso, who's Mini Marvels and G-Man. I just love Chris's style. It's kind of like Jack Kirby meets Charles Schulz. Very cartoony.
It's fun.
And Chris is amazing because he'll do these recreations of famous covers and with his style. But I've got at least 6 or 7, or not more, pieces from Giarrusso. And Giarrusso used to do stuff for free. I remember my son Owen turned 10 years old, and he said, well, what's Owen's favorite characters? And Owen said, oh, Spider-Man, Wolverine, and Hulk. I was like, pick one. He goes, no, all three. So sure enough, on Owen's birthday, in the mail comes a package from Chris Giarrusso with happy birthday, Owen, with all this care for free. And I said, no, come on, Chris. He said, no, it's for kids. And he, and I know Franco and Art used to do that too. Art Balthazar, they used to draw for free too for kids' sketches. I think a lot of people, even Neil Adams, if it's a little kid, like maybe 7 or 8 or younger, sometimes they'll just give them sketches. They won't charge. They're like, yeah, don't worry about it, you know. It's the bigger kids that are 50 years old that, you know.
Have or you have a little kid asking for something that you know is for a big kid.
At
some point, you have to try to kind of put a cap on it.
Yeah,
and that was the thing with Barry Kitson. After you had to endure the line for a while,
right?
They started changing his system to where when I got my first the Spider-Man Black Hat in Boston, he had changed it to you will get a free drawing if you buy a page of art.
That's fair
for $150 or more. And so you'd walk away with a page and a drawing for $150. Well, he goes, or you can pay $150 for the commission you want. Which either way, you're still ahead of the game. But I found a page.
I was going to say, do you ever do any of these Kickstarter programs? Because I've done a couple Kickstarter. I've backed a couple art projects, and I've got an original Joe Sinnott piece that he did for the Charlton movie. I backed them. I gave them some money for their documentary, and one of the levels, like you give so much money and you get something, and one of it was an original Joe Sinnott drawing. So I got this, you know, monster alien creature, but it's drawn by Joe Sinnott, you know, or Sinnott.
Right.
What are you, crazy? I love that. I just stare. It's no superhero. It's like a big one-eyed monster from an alien, like a 50s type of movie, but it's a Joe. He just turned 92 years old. He's a living legend, you know. You can't knock that, you know.
Right. And I have backed a Kickstarter, and I got a Stephen Butler Spider-Man as a reward for contributing, and that's what I've done, because they will get known artists to do the bonus work.
Yeah,
and then if you want to pay $150 as your portion, you will get the book and a commission by this artist or that artist.
Well, you know what kills me? Frank Cho, you know Frank Cho, the artist, he was at my show this year, and I go walking up to the exhibition company guy, very nice guy, Ron. He's always in charge of the move in and the move out with the tables and the booths and such. So he's talking to me on Sunday morning, and he goes, hey, I got this nice Batman drawing from one of these guys. I go, oh, let me see. And it's a ballpoint pen drawing of Batman, like you would call it a head and a bust, head and shoulders. And it's by Frank Cho. And he goes, is this guy, you know, somebody good? I go, you got that from Frank Cho? He's like, yeah. I go, how much did he charge? He goes, oh, he didn't charge me anything. I just got him his table and his chairs. And he was just talking to me for a while. And he just took a pen out, and he drew me this Batman thing. And he said, who do you like? And I said, Batman. And he just gave it to me. I'm staring at him going, I don't have a Frank Cho. You know what I mean? It just cracks me up. And then some of these guys are like, who is this, somebody famous? I'm like, yeah, you know, so, but I mean, That's the benefits of the show. And I know you help out every year with Terrificon, and I go to you and I go, hey, who do you want on your list or who do you have? And you're always ready with that Christmas list of like artists that you want to see come to the show. But that's how it works. I go, you know, I have my favorites. You have your favorites. I try to get the ones I want to come every year. And once I do, I almost have like a checklist in my head, like, okay, had that artist here, had this artist here, had that artist here. So that's that, you know, that's the fun of doing these things, being a fan.
Right. And sometimes if somebody that I'm looking for doesn't show up at the show, I may end up finding somebody else that I like, and somebody I discover another artist that I didn't even know that I enjoyed their work. And so maybe somebody else is going to get my
funds. Well, I mentioned Prince earlier. I know Neil Adam has tons of prints. Do you sometimes buy a print from somebody and have them sign it instead of getting original art, or you just get original pieces?
I have only bought a few prints. I bought some numbered prints from Mark Sparacio. I have a print from Greg Horn from several years ago.
Yep.
I mean, Greg also has a huge display.
Yeah, he was at our show this year. Huge.
Right, I was his I was his de facto transport guy.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
My phone started ringing, and I said hello, and he goes, "Hey, somebody told me you could give me a ride to the show."
Yeah, like, I remember that because I think he came in late. Was it late Friday afternoon?
Yeah.
And I had already had the car pick up everybody, and I think it was me. I was like, "Hey, are you near the Bradley Airport? Could you go pick up Greg Horn?" So,
he's a nice guy, too.
I was going to say, I think that's how sometimes you end up by accident getting a car ride with these guys, or you'll pick them up for me, and you start a conversation and you get sketches from them. You know?
Well, you know, by accident, by design. I mean,
I have some Mark Bagley stuff. I had to drive him back to the airport after the Trumbull show. And we were going to the New York airport, and he's in the car literally with a pen and paper or a sketch cover. And he says, who do you like? I said, you know, the Thing, Ben Grimm. And I'm always thinking that must be a pain to draw because of all the rocks and stuff.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, there's a trick to doing it. I'm like, really? And he's telling me how they do it, and they do the shape, and then they break up the rocks. And it's not as – I don't know if everybody does this, but for Bagley, he had a secret to doing the Thing. And he banged out this Ben Grimm smoking a cigar on the way to the airport. Maybe it's like a 45-minute drive or something. And by the time we got there, he's like, oh, here you go. And it's amazing because, I mean, I went to school for art and I illustrated and I tried working for Marvel and I could draw somewhat. But these guys here, they could do it in their sleep. You know, I mean, right. I see Ordway take a pencil when we're at lunch sometimes and we're going over what the next Terrificon poster should be. And Jerry just, I say, oh, make it like this. And Jerry just, bing, ding, 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 without even thinking. And you just look, you go, oh, shit, look at that, man. You know,
right. They create something from nothing out of whole cloth.
Yeah.
And it's just the way their mind works through experience and through trial and error.
This is what they do
else.
For a living. Yeah, yeah. Right. I would assume any tradesman guy would know how to, like a carpenter would know how to build a chair in 10 seconds. And I'd be like, well, how did you do that? You know?
But it
is something. So anyway, it's been fun having you on the show. I just realized we've been talking for an hour and I wanted
so
to
you
get
can trim it down.
No, because like I said, I know people collect comic books. I know people collect toys, and you kind of collect toys too. But collecting the artwork it's unique. It's original. What would you suggest to people? Like, I tend to have a lot of Captain America artwork. I have, you know, Alan Davis gives me something. Joe Rubenstein. They say, oh, who do you like? I say Captain America. So it's easy for these guys to you know, draw me something. Do you pick one particular hero, like you mentioned Spider-Man and Batman, but you have jam pieces, which is like a bunch of different artists working on different characters on one page, don't you?
Yeah, I have a Batman jam, which I had different artists all add their versions of Batman to it. And then I have a couple of different Spider-Man jams where I have villains surrounding Spider-Man, and then there's the other one is battle piece.
Who comes up with that layout? I mean, I know you're not an artist by trade, so how do you like tell them what you want?
Well, on the Batman head and bust.
Well, no, that's easy. I'm talking about that bigger jam piece with the Spider-Man because I've seen that, and it's got like a bunch of villains on it as well, right?
Yes, it does. The single pager I thought of myself. It's in landscape mode, so it's wide across.
Yep.
And my thought was upside down Spider-Man, the way he kind of descends on
his web. Yeah.
And it's almost like he's come into the middle of this villain pile.
Right.
And the spider sense lines are going off. I just had to decide who was going to be on it. And little by little, I got the different artists to add. The only one that screwed me up, but he screwed me up in a good way, John Hebert, I had him do Rhino. Well, he basically drew a scale Rhino to everybody else, and Rhino's so big.
Right.
I had my initial thought was putting Spidey right in the center, but because Rhino, his shoulders are so big, it kind of pushed Spidey to one side. That's also one of the good things about art, because you kind of roll with the punches, you know, things change on the fly, and I love Rhino.
And
I ended up having Ron Friends at your show this year.
Yeah.
He finished it off with my upside down Spidey.
Oh yeah.
Yes. Now the other
Drew the Spider-Man part?
Yes.
Oh nice.
Yes. Yes. And on the two page battle splash, I had a pair of brothers from Philadelphia, or from Pittsburgh, the Frame brothers, Brian and Brendan Frame. I had known them, and they do really nice art, but it's not overpriced.
Mm-hmm.
I approached them online about doing a sketch. You have, like, the background. You do the skeleton, if you will, of a battle page. And I tell them what I'm looking for. They gave me a couple different ideas, and we settled on it, and all they had to do was kind of lightly, they don't have to...
The layout, the breakdown.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I paid them for it, and they sent me the two pages. And then little by little, I go around, and I think it took me like 5 years to get it done, finding the artist that I wanted, what show they were going to be at. And I was very pleased with it.
Didn't you get Juergens to draw something on that too?
No, that's on the Batman Family splash that I have.
Because I remember
Gatefold Hush cover.
I remember Dan Juergens coming to the show, and I could have swore you got a piece by him on that.
Yeah, Dan Juergens drew a beautiful Superman, and Graham Nolan drew a beautiful Batman on that one.
Nice.
I was trying to keep. I mean, Nolan is my Batman guy from when I got back into
the whole Nightfall thing.
And that's why I'm really looking forward to Tom Grummett hopefully adding Robin to that piece, because he's my Robin guy. But sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't. And so I have to change my thought and maybe have another guy do this character or whatever. But that's kind of that part of the journey. I don't want to be too melodramatic about it, but it's part of the journey about a jam piece is you never exactly know
how it's
going to turn out. I had George Perez add to my big two-page battle splash. He did Iceman for me on the ice bridge.
Right.
And that was really cool, you know, to have a George Perez. I mean, he's such a
Have
nice
you ever
guy.
Combined characters? Like, you mentioned Spider-Man and Batman, but I was like having a DC Marvel face-off, like, you know, Hulk versus, I don't know, Superman.
Not so much in that regard, but when you say combined characters, I was walking around the Big Apple show one time, and I remember not being able to get what I wanted. I asked a couple guys, they were filled up.
Yeah.
I had a few dollars in my pocket, and I walked by one of our favorite guys, Billy Tucci.
Yep, Billy.
And he wasn't busy. And I was just kind of almost in a bad mood.
Yeah.
And I said, hey, do you think you could draw a combination Batman, Spider-Man headshot?
Yeah.
And he looked at me, and then he looked at the paper, and he's like, you could see him kind of working it in his mind. And he goes, I think I can do that. And so I have a half Batman, half Spider-Man.
Well, that's a
head.
Weird thing. Yeah,
it was, but I'm kind of a Batman Spider-Man guy, and it's odd, but you know, it's one big eye and one small eye. You know, one ear and one no ear, but that's how I combine.
Well, here's
Batman
another question for you: do you get some of these things penciled by some artists and then inked by other ones?
Very, very rarely. I may have one or two.
Why is that? Because I asked that because I got a beautiful Alan Davis full figure Captain America drawing he did for me this year. And people saw it and they go, you should get Mark Farmer to ink it. Because Mark Farmer worked with Alan Davis a lot and he was at my show. So I walked over to Mark and I got the Alan Davis print and I said, Mark, what do you think? And he goes, I don't want to mess that up. Because there's something about pencil where you get the tones and the little sketches that they do the shading on it that, yeah, yes, it could ink it, but it's like, well, then it's going to just be black and white.
And the pencil will be actually gone.
Right, because that's the thing. And then I told Jerry about it, and Jerry said, well, what you could do is scan it in and then have like a blue line made of it and then have somebody go and ink it. And then what you do is you take a picture and get rid of the blue line. And that way it's still right there, but you don't ruin the original. And you can put them side by side.
There are plenty of people who do that. If they get a pencil by somebody, yeah, who is like a pencil-only guy, they'll who is more it comfortable in pencil, right, like Paul Pelletier is,
yep,
comfortable
I got a Paul Pelletier this year, yeah.
Right. But if I asked him when I got something from him, I said, do you do like marker sketches? He goes, I'm really more comfortable in pencil.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue with the guy.
No,
so
no,
he
no,
did
no
me a beautiful Batman.
Right.
Now, if I wanted a Paul Pelletier art piece,
right,
that is actually a fully inked piece, mm-hmm, I'd have to burn a copy of the pencils and then bring it to an inker.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you'd have both. But I don't want to lose the art that I got from Paul Pelletier.
No. And I was going to say, so, I'm going to wrap it up soon, but what artists, living or dead, do you wish you had that you don't have right now, if you could have your dream piece or sketch by somebody or page?
Ooh. I tell you, I want to come up with something really easy. But, I mean, my Spider-Man guy, I'd love to have a good Mark Bagley,
oh yeah,
Ultimate Spider-Man page. I mean, I was reading back with him. I have Graham Nolan Batman pages, right, so I'm happy with that.
Living or dead,
John Romita Jr. Amazing Spider-Man page. Even farther back, Steve Ditko. I prefer John Romita's style, but yeah, I appreciate Steve Ditko's contribution,
right?
And so, you know, what's worth more?
The Ditko.
It's what's worth more to you.
Well, that's right? What I was going to say too, yeah, because I talk to Spencer Beck like almost daily. I gotta imagine that he's probably got Bagley Ultimate Spider-Man art around.
He does, but it goes for a lot of money. And
oh, does
and
it?
When you start talking about Romita or Ditko,
Ditko
Spider-Man
10,000
pages. Tens of thousands,
right,
of dollars,
right,
and then even more so if you're talking about a key book or a key page.
You know what's so funny,
you're
though?
Well into the $30,000-$50,000.
I know somebody that just sold two Ditko pages for $30,000 each.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know him,
they're
too
out there.
He's a writer. It was I think it was Peter David had some pages, but
they're out there. You just have to want them more.
Oh,
you know that
was the first thing I thought of when Steve Ditko died back in June, because we went to his apartment and it was full of stuff in the background. I didn't know what was in there, but when he opened the door, we could see inside, and I was thinking to myself, does he have like boxes of original artwork just stacked around there? And what did they do when they came in there? Because they found him. Sadly, he'd been dead for a couple days when mm-hmm. they came in there, and you don't know. Not everybody's honest. If somebody walked in there and they knew who he was, and you know, maybe they took a couple of pages, you don't know what happened. But
exactly.
I hope it didn't, but still, I wonder.
And even though he hadn't drawn for years, you don't know that he hadn't been drawing in his apartment.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Right. And maybe that was his hobby, drawing.
Yeah. Oh, he was still working on stuff. Yeah. He was doing little self-published books. And the other thing is, you know the story how somebody donated to the Smithsonian Institute the original Spider-Man pages of the mm-hmm. origin issue. It just showed up in a box. They don't know who owned it. Word I had was that somebody collected it, and they realized it's a one-of-a-kind famous piece, so you couldn't sell it anywhere. And they had obtained it, I heard, illegally. So they donated it to the Smithsonian Institute. That's what I heard. And some people even said it was Ditko himself, who was known not to care for much money and just donated it to the Smithsonian. I don't know. But that's where the original Amazing Fantasies 15, I think it is in the Smithsonian. And
that's amazing. Hopefully I'll be seeing that soon.
On display?
I would love for them to display it.
Yeah. One of the great art shows was down in Delaware, or Baltimore, I'm sorry, was the Jeppe Museum of Pop Culture. And that's now closed. They closed it this year. But Steve Jeppe had tons of original art. And one of the pages I had in my hand was the first ever Walt Disney drawing of Mickey Mouse.
Wow.
Had it because Mike Carbo had it. And this was in 2010 in June. And he had it at the Wizard World Philly. And he let me hold it. And it was just a piece of paper, like tracing paper. And it was Walt Disney's first ever drawing of Mickey Mouse. And I had it in my hand. And It ended up in the Jeppe Museum. It's got to be worth millions, you know.
Oh, you would think.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that was just something to see. But anyway, it's been fun finding about original art. I think if anybody has an interest in it and they listen to this episode, they would have got some good tidbits of knowledge about how to go collecting it, how to find it. It's out there, right? It's out there every second of the day.
It is. I mean, the first stop is one of two places. It's eBay or your artist dealer of choice, your Spencer Beck, your Anthony Snyder, your Romita man, John Berkey, you know.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, they're out there. It doesn't take a lot of looking anymore to go find pages.
And sometimes comic shops get them, too.
They do. I came across, briefly, some Classics Illustrated pages.
Really?
From way back in a comic shop, I think in Worcester, I went to one time. And I didn't even think to grab them. I was looking at them. But
in Worcester,
really,
would that be
strike a chord.
That's Entertainment?
I've been to That's Entertainment. I've been to another one, but it quite possibly could have been That's Entertainment.
I remember Black Cat Comics here. I'm going there on November 3rd. Me, Ordway, Scott Martin, a couple people were headed out to Black Comedy. He's having a huge comic book sale right now. But he had original artwork pages, Jim Aparo pages, I think. I can't remember. Remember, I think I sent you scans of them, and you were like, where'd you get these? And I'm like, oh, the guy at the shop had them. And, Anyway. But so, yeah, they're out there, too. I wish I could just... Ordway, I know he has a ton of original art. Not only his, but famous people like Wally Wood and, you name it. Jerry's got pages, too. He's got Ditko pages as well. So,
good for him.
Yeah.
They're in good hands.
Oh, I know. That's what I'm saying. It's nice to know people appreciate this stuff and not just throw it out and, you know, use it as a doormat to wipe up their snowy boots like Trump.
Exactly. I appreciate you having me. I'm always glad to talk art.
Yeah, no, and like I said, you're always out there looking for stuff, so people might be bumping into you in the New England area.
Absolutely.
All right, well, that wraps up for an episode of the Power Cosmic Special Edition on collecting original art. Our guest has been Mr. Steve Barker, Sketchgetter B on the boards, and he's out there looking for original art. Thanks a lot, Steve.
All right,
and
thank
that's
you.
That. This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.